from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Jeff_Calkins. Jeff, what's happening?
I'm good.
Good to hear. Good to hear. How was yesterday at Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium? Standing outside, listening to Jeff Crane give some remarks, seeing some of the ramps come down, everything else. I've been keeping up with that live stream. It's been cool to see.
Mm-hmm. So I had sort of like in order to go, because it happened during my radio show, through the miracle of radio technology, we taped one segment, which allowed me to slip out and get there at 10 o'clock. And
don't
then
tell our secrets
to,
like that. You don't need to tell
so
our
Jeffrey
secrets.
Jeffrey could handle Chris Harrington. Some people were startled. They're like, I just heard you talking on the radio. And and then Jeffrey was kind enough to handle the Chris Harrington segment so I could be there. And I had sort of like, I mean, we had had Jeff Crane on. I knew this was happening, and I knew whatever. And so I'm like, do I really want to, like, but it was kind of cool, honestly. Like, it is, it wasn't, you know, the dramatic implosion of the Checker Dome, for example, that you had in St. Louis
right.
once, or the, you know, it wasn't a wrecking ball soaring through the sky and slamming into the Liberty Bowl, which would have been dramatic. It was, as I'm sure you've seen, you know, a couple of machines sort of slamming into the building and another one chewing at the building, basically. But, you know, I talked to Scott Fleming, who's one of the architects, lead architects on the project, and he knew what was going to happen. But he's like, as someone who's lived in Memphis for my whole life, this is kind of amazing, watching the Liberty Bowl come down. And it's sort of like I've been obviously following this saga and covering this saga all along. But I think the fact that, oh, my God, this is really happening. This
yep.
side of the – I think we all knew the press box was going to be moved, you know, before this season. But the idea that the west side would be essentially torn down, for some reason, I said, whoa, this is really happening. And I've seen a lot of the reaction on social media as, what? What? This is happening? And so I'm glad they, you know, publicized it. And it was, as I put in the column, it was sort of – it was nostalgia without regret, because
yep.
sometimes when you see something ending, you just, you know, you feel, oh, well, that's a little, you feel a little wistfulness. But the Liberty Bowl isn't going anywhere. We didn't have to sit there and have a funeral for it or reflect on, oh, all these great times you've had at the Liberty Bowl, because the Liberty Bowl is still going to be there.
Some people still did that, but I think very few.
No, and I get that. I mean, even I was talking to Steve Earhart about it. He was reflecting on a lot of the things that have happened at the Liberty Bowl, and it's been a lot of really significant events have taken place at the Liberty Bowl. But the Liberty Bowl is not going anywhere. It's just going to be a very, very different Liberty Bowl. And so I thought it was a very good day for the university. As I said in my column, you can sit here and wonder, you know, why didn't this happen 10 years ago or 15 years ago when – it felt like it would have done some good in the realignment chase. But the truth of the matter is, and I said this in the column, that in your real life, if you sit there and look at your own decisions and think, why didn't I start eating better 10 years ago or whatever it was,
right.
you know, Like, there's no profit in that, right? What matters is what you start doing today. You can't sit here and lament what you didn't do 10 years ago or, you know, in the end, you be your best self starting today. And I think that's what the university has done. And we don't know what the future holds in terms of realignment, but there's no question that they are better off with a newer stadium. It's like if you're applying for a job and it said you need a college degree, having a college degree won't ensure you get that job, but not having a college degree will ensure you don't.
Yep.
And sort of that's where they are with the stadium. Having a new spruced up stadium won't ensure that they're in a better conference than they're in that right now, but not having one will ensure that they won't.
Yeah.
And so I thought it was a positive day overall for the university, very clearly. It's going to be an adjustment, and I think when people show up to, you know, that first game, it'll be a little jarring, you know,
yep.
to have the West Side transformed as it was. But the only other interesting things is the things that I did sort of learn in addition to the sort of the just witnessing it. You know, I'd written a piece about what's going to happen to the flag that was on top of the Liberty
yep.
Bowl. And I talked to Tom Marshall, who's one of the leaders of the project. And he said right now they're thinking they might put it, this isn't the finished, but they might put it in that big, in the big area that they're going to have on the west side, the big sort of, you know, plaza area. And they might have it at the display there. You won't be able to see it when you drive by the stadium, but they would have some storyboards to explain the history, et cetera. That would be one option. And then the other thing that I didn't quite understand was that phase two is tearing down the west side, putting up this party plaza, and then the luxury suite tower, basically the premium seating tower. But then phase three is putting in a shelf of 6,000 essentially more seats on that would come up over the plaza. And it honestly, it looks more like a stadium should look once that is done, right? So you'd still have the plaza, but it would be under this overhang, that and the overhang would be another 5,600 seats. And I know, for example, that the people over at the AutoZone Liberty Bowl really are pretty insistent that they get those extra 5,600 seats. I think that's the number, because that's what they feel like they need in order, you know, to make the AutoZone Liberty Bowl continue as a success. So anyway, interesting day, 3 weeks of bringing that thing down, and then they can start, you know, building the future.
Now, I know you approached this in your column, but generally speaking, do you think it is too late? Obviously, I know what you said, and I agree with you. Can't look back at the bad decisions. You got to move forward. But, like, do you think it's too late?
Well, I think, very clearly, I'll put it this way. It would have been better had it done before. You know, there's no question. It would have been better. Now, you can argue, like, as I put in my column, I outlined the dates when UCF took it, you know, built their new stadium, when Houston built their new stadium, when Cincinnati renovated its new stadium, when Louisville built its new stadium and then renovated its stadium, and all of those, you know, are in better conferences. Now, in fairness, there is more than just the stadium that separated those places from Memphis for one reason or another,
yep.
fair or not. And so UCF is in Florida, in a booming market, in a bigger university, you know, is in a really prosperous, booming university that people wanted to be a part of, right? And so Houston's in a bigger market, and, you know, and so it wasn't just the stadium. I think had they somehow decided 15 years ago to build a new stadium, I can't promise that things would have been different. So, they clearly would have been better off to have done it prior to when they're doing it now. I think there is a very real chance that they can get ultimately into a conference that is better than what they're in now.
Right.
Now, there's no longer this sort of, you're either over the wall and in the Power Five or you're not. Like, it seems pretty clear there's going to be a whole, you know, gradation of places from the SEC on the one hand, you know, right, even now, like if you're in the SEC, that's great. It's not the same as being the Big 12 is the same as being in the SEC. We can call them all Power Five conferences, but they're not all created equal. I think there will continue to be evolution and changes, and I think there's a very real chance that Memphis can be in a better position than they're in now. What that looks like, whether it's the shards of the AAC, ACC, which is what people sort of mostly latch on to, but that's just because what we can imagine. We latch onto that one because that's the thing that we can imagine right now, right? But there may be other things that we can't imagine right now that will come down the pike. So I don't think it's too late in the sense that I do believe that having the new stadium will position them to do interesting things going forward. And what that looks like, it's impossible to say.
Now, about the football that will actually be played in that stadium this year, AAC Media Days going along. We have the poll out. Memphis, 23 of 30 first place votes. I think that's just about right. But I do like the mindset that Ryan Silverfield has. He said, I like that the media thinks high of us. I don't care, though. And that's the mindset you need to have if you're going to be the team with a target on your back.
Yeah, I don't know what a coach is supposed to say to that, right? I mean, that's what they always say. Like, we have to do it on the field. Like, that is, of course, true. And I do think that it's worth noting that as far as anyone sort of has been able to discern, I haven't seen anyone to contradict this. This is literally the first time in the history of the program they've been picked to win a conference.
It's wild.
I have not heard. Now, it's possible, it may not be true, but I have not heard anyone. That's what Jeffrey sort of said on our show, and as we looked into it, I think that's correct. Now, some of that is because teams that would have typically been picked to finish ahead of you are now in the Big 12, right? It's not all because of the good work you've done, but a lot of it is because of the good work you've done. And so if you have literally unprecedented predictions of success, I think it's only fair to say that there is unprecedented pressure.
Yes.
Right? If they have never been picked number one before, they have never faced the kind of pressure they've had. There's never been this kind of expectation. You were expected to finish. You were literally expected to finish first. And so if you don't, you are disappointing. I mean, that is what has happened here. And that's, of course, what you want. You don't want to be picked to finish seventh or eighth or fifth or sixth or whatever else. You want to be picked to finish first. But it is kind of remarkable. It has never happened before. And so you can then say that they have never faced this kind of expectations before. And that is a burden that they're going to have to deal with. And I do think, and I'm not the first person to point this out, the tricky thing about this team schedule is that if you look at that poll, the next three teams,
all on the road, Memphis,
you're playing them all, and you're playing them all at their place. And that is the catch, right? I mean, that is a hell of a thing.
So what's not disappointment? Like, is it winning a conference championship or just showing up in a conference championship?
There's levels of disappointment, right? I think anything less than winning the conference championship is disappointing. But I think anything less than being in the conference championship game is a failure.
Okay.
Right? I think those are different things. I do think a conference championship game or bust as sort of the minimum of what it looks like to have a successful season. I mean, barring whatever, if Seth separates his shoulder in the first game,
right,
I think we start grading this differently, right? But, you know, provided reasonable good health, I think you look at this and saying, if you don't make the conference championship game, it's a failure. And if you make the conference championship and lose, yeah, I wouldn't label that a failure. But it's not what you want, and it's not what, honestly, people have predicted for you, right? So you have fallen short of predictions, but I would not then call that a failure. That seems a little extreme.
Yeah. Now, I spoke on this a little bit earlier, but what did you think of the finishing order after Memphis? UTSA, Tulane, South Florida, and then Army with a first-place vote. I don't know why they got one, but I guess it's for the United States of America, shout-out. But what did you think of that order of finish? UTSA, Tulane, South Florida. I think that's a little bit out of order.
I probably would put Tulane next, honestly.
Okay.
But you would not?
I like South Florida. I am bought into South Florida. I think they have a lot of positive momentum, good coach, really young, good skill players. Byron Brown, I mean, just lit Memphis up last year, and he was 17 freaking years old. He's going to be a true sophomore. Right. They have a really good running back. If they can get that defense to catch up, which they've done a decent job on the transfer portal of doing, I think that this team, that South Florida team, could very well finish in second. I wouldn't be surprised. I would not be surprised at all.
Yeah, and I guess I see Tulane has uncertainties, right? Because they got the new coach and they got the new quarterback, and so that's very different. Both extremely highly touted, though, like, you know, with real records of success. So we'll see. I think the nice thing is that in Seth Hennigan, you have the most proven performer of all, right? And I heard him talking about this today. He told Frank Bonner from the Daily Memphian today that this is the first time that he's ever said, he normally doesn't say, this is what I expect to accomplish, right? That's not the approach. He just says, I'll do my best every whatever. But this time he said he wants to throw for 4,000 yards. Riley Ferguson did that, actually, and Brady did it once, I believe. But he wants to throw for 4,000 yards. And then I think he said he wants to run for 320 because that gets him to 1,000 for his career. So that's a nice round number, right?
Yeah.
And then most of all, he wants to win the conference championship.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because, like, it's interesting that you do that, and it's interesting that you decide to reveal that you've done that. But he very clearly is in a commanding place, and he's got his weapons back, and you have to feel pretty comfortable if you're Seth right now.
Ultimately, I think UTSA gets that second place pick because they got the Mizzou schedule. They got that Mizzou SEC. I mean, where I mean, what is it? East Carolina, Rice, FAU, Tulsa, North Texas, and Temple. And Army outside of Memphis. I mean, that's as easy a schedule in this conference as you could get. But at the same time, like, UTSA, no quarterback anymore. Owen McCown or Eddie Lee Marburg. You ever heard of either of those guys? Not particularly.
No.
You've lost your running back and your quarterback and defensive players and your whole O-line over the past few years. You lost your best OC ever. Will Stein's now at Oregon. I just feel like there's going to be some games on that schedule that they could drop because they have lost a lot of talent over the years.
Well, and I did see, as you point out, I saw Phil Steele, for example, pick them to win the conference. And it's purely not because he thinks they're the best team. It's because he looks at the schedule, right? And so I think that's the logic for UTSA is purely based on, yeah, they've been good, so they'll figure out a way, but look at the schedule they get to play.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, I think from a talent perspective, it's South Florida probably in second. Because Tulane also is going to have some issues at quarterback and with a new coach.
How'd you like playing in South Florida?
Not very much. The stadium with nobody in it, it never was great. And also, we would always catch them. It was okay. I never got to, go enjoy it. But what used to bother me, too, is, like, you would always, if you played at South Florida, it would be fifth, sixth, seventh game of the year when you were starting to transition at home into the fall weather and most of the AAC started to transition into that fall weather, and there in South Florida it's always 80 and just as humid as possible.
Yeah. I think I only covered one game there. Don't recall when that was.
And also my biggest memory at South Florida is I had two high ankle sprains playing in a game where we barely won. I think it was like 24-17 was the final score. But that was the 9-win season where we started 8-0. Two high ankle sprains, and I had to weather that.
You gutted through it?
Yeah, I gutted through that in that weather. That was tough.
Yeah.
Now, Grizzly Summer League, I got to be honest. Outside of the Zach Edey injury, any negatives, really? I think mostly positive.
No, it occurred to me this morning talking about it, and I hadn't thought about it, that literally every single player who mattered exceeded expectations or met or exceeded expectations. And even Zach Edey, no, you didn't see enough of him. We wanted to see more of him. But what you saw of him excited you, right? Like, and so you go right down the line. Normally, you know, summer league could be a mixed bag. Take last summer, right? Jake LaRavia, you know, Zaire Williams, they were kind of eh. You know, there were some decent games and some iffy games and whatever else. You're like, you know, or just look around the league. Look around a lot of the first round picks this year, and they had atrocious summer leagues or concerning summer leagues or summer leagues that made you say, okay, it's just the first summer, they'll be better, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas with the Grizzlies, every single player,
yep,
Zach Edey did exactly what you wanted, just got not as many minutes. Gigi Jackson set aside the first game. Beyond that, did exactly what you wanted, was terrific, one of the best players in summer league, was fabulous. Scottie Pippen Jr., obviously terrific. Jake LaRavia made it, you know, looked like a player who'd been a 30-year NBA guy. Had a big night last night, yet again. And then the two second-round picks also acquitted themselves. Would have loved to see a little more of Cam Spencer, but my God, he's shot 54%, I think. Yeah. And then Jalen Wells, you know, big night last night. He had a couple of big nights, and he's the one who looks farthest away, obviously. But you can see just purely in the size and the shooting ability why they drafted him in the second round. And so I don't think there is a single player. Trey Jemison didn't really distinguish himself, but I don't think there is a single player who suited up for the Grizzlies this summer who was meaningful, single meaningful player, who you could be disappointed in, who you're anything other than pleased and happy about, which is kind of amazing. And I think speaks well of the organization. You know, I was thinking about this. You can focus on the whiffs. And Zaire Williams very clearly now was a whiff, right?
Right.
But look at the offsetting hits that they've
yes.
had. You know, like even in that very draft, you've got Vince Williams out of that draft,
yep.
you know? So, well, and then you got Gigi out of last year's draft.
We talked about this a little bit earlier. In a year, they went from Kennedy Chandler, Zaire Williams, and David Roddy, and they landed on Vince Williams Jr., Gigi Jackson, Scottie Pippen Jr. I think that's a pretty good turnaround for three players in a year.
Well, and to me, it shows the nature of the draft. If you're just not going to hit on everybody, right? So it's they threw a bunch of they could be criticized for having too many rookies that, you know, the Zaire sure. Williams draft, whatever. But what they did was they threw a bunch of darts, and it so happened that the dart that you threw at Vince Williams is the one that hit rather than the one that you threw at towards, you know, Zaire Williams. But it doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter which ones hit as long as some hit. Like, you look at that Zaire Williams draft, and after he is picked at 10, it's hard to identify who you actually think they should have, you know, they should have picked. Except unless they had stayed at their, own pick, but so there's one player who you're like, okay, well that's the guy they should have picked. I think it underlines the fact that I have great confidence in this front office and how reassuring it is to have a front office that, you know, in which you can have great confidence. Now, who knows whether Zach Edey will be enough of an answer at center? I guess that can be your one question mark heading into this next season. Did they do enough there? But it's been pretty damn impressive, and summer league I thought was really heartening.
All right, now final thing. You talk to Chris Harrington every day. I know you didn't talk to him yesterday. But the Luke Kennard thing, that's the next thing on the to-do list, and it feels like they're going to have a lot of space and opportunity to go get that done in the next couple of weeks. I put a drop-dead date on next Saturday, getting a deal done with Luke Kennard. Do you think we go over or under that, or do you have any earthly idea?
I'll say sooner than next Saturday. We actually have reached the point. Like, Chris has been the guy all along has been saying, don't worry, don't worry, don't worry, don't worry, don't worry. There's very clearly they have some kind of an understanding here. Both sides want it done. They're just waiting to. Chris today admitted, I got no idea why it's taking this long.
Yeah, right.
You know, we're finally, like, having cleared up the Zaire Williams situation, moved that salary off the books, you would think, what exactly is the impediment? You know, unless he is, as he put it, you know, in the Marc Gasol is on a boat situation. Like, once upon a time when we were waiting to hear if he was going to sign a max contract that had been offered him, and we waited and waited and waited. We asked Mark later. He said, well, I was on a boat. You know, so unless Luke Kennard is on a boat.
He's got an infinite home. I can't imagine he'd be on a boat.
it's kind of mystifying as to why the hell it's taking so long. So if you tell me that you're it's over under before or after Saturday at noon, I'm going to say before.
Okay.
It will happen before Saturday.
Okay.
I just don't understand why.
I even had it as next
waiting.
I had it as next Saturday, but if you want to go this Saturday under,
this
I may have
Saturday,
to update my line.
You were going to do 11 days from now.
Yes. I was trying to give them some space and opportunity.
I think it's going to be done by this Saturday. Yeah. I think I'm going to say it's done before this Saturday. This coming Saturday, it will be
done. To be honest with you, I thought after the Zaire Williams trade, it would be done within minutes or hours.
Within 24 hours after the Zaire Williams trade. That's what I thought, too. So who the hell knows?
Yep. We'll see. We'll see. But, Jeff, I appreciate it, man. We'll do it again on Thursday. That is Jeff Calkins, columnist of the Daily Memphian, also host of the Jeff Calkins Show 9-11, right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Now, he's brought to you by Oxbow, family-owned and operated retail store, making waves in Memphis for over a decade. Get over to their convenient location, off Poplar, on June Road behind the Amoco Station, 964 June Road to be exact. They have a bunch of gifts, knickknacks, everything there. I mean, they have vintage vinyl when you go into that store on the bottom floor. They have autographs. They have a good card selection, too, so sports trading cards if you're into that type of thing.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame.
Two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly, beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Make sure you check out all of the gifts. They have you know, your tailgating gear. If you get to the Grove, if you get to you know, Tiger Lane, they have cups, coolers, koozies, tumblers, the whole nine yards. You will enjoy what you see. They have a kind, courteous staff that will point you in the direction of everything there. They have hunting and outdoor essentials as well, but I want to point you in the direction of the best thing there, and that's the clothing. They have button-downs, nice pants, slacks. They have vintage tees. They have everything you could possibly want, and they have everything in the best brands. Genteel, Free Fly, Fair Harbor, Duckhead, Mizzen, and Maine. You have a selection of everything. And you have your favorite teams there as well. Grizzlies, Tigers, your SEC favorites, Arkansas, Tennessee, Alabama, you name it. They have it over at 964 June Road. And they also have it online. So make sure you go online to shopoxbow.com. And what's nice, I know you, when you go in, make sure you tell them that Gabe sent you. But you can tell them that Gabe sent you online as well. Because I have a promo code. When you go to fill up that shopping cart with whatever your heart desires, there's going to be a spot to put in a promo code. Use my promo code, The Gabe Show. All caps, no spaces, The Gabe Show. And you'll get 20% off your online order at shopoxbow.com. But whether you're going online or in store to 964 June Road, remember to shop local, shop Oxbow. Now, most teams are just about reported to training camp in the NFL, and we have some NFL news that comes with that. We have a lot of press availability, everything else. Joe Burrow showed up looking like Eminem today. We'll cover all that when we return right here on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Back in on the Game Crunch on 92.9 FM ESPN. Most everybody in the NFL, vets, rookies, coach, everybody has showed up for training camp. And today was the day where we saw the new and hopefully improved Joe Burrow, who has been cleared for training camp. Did you see the hairstyle today, Connor? Let me know. We have an Eminem look here from Joe Burrow. He cut it down real short and dyed it completely blonde. How do we feel about this? He's a strange duck. He's a strange duck at times, man.
As long as he throws touchdown passes,
sure.
That's all that matters.
Right,
he'll be wearing a helmet.
Right.
He's wearing a helmet.
I get it. But he tried to make a statement. He makes a statement every year, whether it's his clothing or his hairstyle,
sure,
or what have you. But also, on top of that, with the Bengals, we know he's fully cleared. Ja'Marr Chase, there was a day yesterday, it was reported by Ben Baby, ESPN reporter for the Bengals. It was reported that Ja'Marr Chase, his deal with the Bengals, we know T. Higgins is going to play on the franchise tag, and Ja'Marr Chase is looking to re-up, and he looked to re-up this entire offseason. Looks like the deal will likely be on hold until next offseason for Ja'Marr Chase and the Bengals, which is kind of strange to me. I feel like you should just pay him while you have the chance. I think they can still extend him next offseason, but you're going to have a full year, and that price is going to get driven up. We know how NFL contract extensions work, but they need to get this deal done because since 2021 – we know they're both LSU products, and they're very familiar with each other. Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase have tied second with 27 pass touchdowns when linking up. Pass yards per game when targeting Ja'Marr Chase, 86.4 yards per game, seventh in the NFL since 2021. And the touchdown rate, ninth, top 10 in the NFL, 7.6%. This is something they need to get done, and I keep trying to tell everybody, get ahead of this thing. Because the Bengals right now, they are putting themselves in a very precarious situation with a lot of their guys. T. Higgins has been a big part of their success. They've already pissed him off. You don't want to risk pissing Ja'Marr Chase off. That defense was 31st out of 32 teams in the NFL last year. This entire, franchise is putting themselves in a position to where they could fall off the map going into next year. I don't fully expect that. But they need to get these deals done, and they need to get out ahead of things. And it doesn't seem like they have the wherewithal to do that right now. They are not putting themselves in a good position. And I continue to tell people that. I'll continue to push that out.
Is it a make-or-break season for the Bengals?
I think it's a make-or-break season to see if Joe Burrow can stay on the damn field. Can I be honest? I know Joe Burrow has already been to two AFC championships in a row. He's played in a Super Bowl. He's been one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL the past 4 years. I get all of that. But I think this is the year where it's Joe Burrow, this wrist injury that everybody's confused about, that the Bengals say they have no issues with. Can you stay on the field and perform at the highest of levels right now, even though not everything is going your direction? I think this is a really big year. This is an inflection point in Joe Burrow's career. Can you continue to stay healthy, or are we going to trend in the wrong direction?
I hope he can. But if he is not able to, it does feel like the Bengals are going to have to make a decision about the future.
Yeah, they're still going to stand by him because they have him on a massive contract.
Right.
But you still have to find, if he's a guy that can't stay healthy, you're going to have to get a probably high-paid backup to go back him up every year in case he does get injured.
Zach Wilson, come on down.
That could be very interesting for them. Speaking of quarterbacks and new quarterbacks, rookie quarterbacks, Sam Darnold, apparently at Vikings camp, has been taking a majority of the first team snaps. That's interesting because you know who they picked in this year's draft? Do you know who that is? J.J. McCarthy out of Michigan, a guy that not everybody was high on. He was a really polarizing prospect. And again, I'll reiterate what I said around the draft about him being picked as high as he was by the Minnesota Vikings. It's not that I don't think he can do it. I've just never seen him do it. And in a Kevin O'Connell system, you're going to have to air the ball out a little bit more. You have a wide receiver who is very highly paid since this offseason, and Justin Jefferson, you have to keep very, very happy. But Kevin O'Connell basically stood up at the podium and said he doesn't want to pressurize the situation for J.J. McCarthy. And I think it's also clear that he doesn't want to just give him the job. He wants this quarterback room. He just reiterated it every single time he was asked about it. He wants to create a competitive quarterback room. And Sam Darnold, I guess, is at the top of the list, and he really likes Sam Darnold. But I want to ask this question. Is there any other quarterback, high picked quarterback that has gotten the benefit more, a benefit of the doubt more than Sam Darnold over the years. This guy gets chance after chance after chance after chance where a lot of guys that were picked around him didn't get the opportunity. Josh Rosen is a guy who's out of the league right now. There's a bunch of quarterbacks that get picked highly, don't perform, similar to Sam Darnold, that just get castigated. They're backups, lifetime backups, or they're out of the league playing in the XFL. Sam Darnold, for me, I think he's talented. I always thought he was talented. He's still relatively young, in his mid-20s. But this guy gets more opportunities than anybody else as a high-pick quarterback that I've seen in the past decade.
Man, the Rosen thing is one of the weirdest things I've ever seen in the NFL. It happens so fast. I understand really, the regime the dynamics, change happened and all that stuff. Context really matters with it. But for him to basically fall completely out of the NFL and not even getting a backup position somewhere was just kind of wild to me. Do you think it was an attitude issue with him?
I just think it was regime change and he wasn't very good. I think it was that simple.
But then you look at
Kyler Murray, a way more talented guy coming into the league. And I think around the draft, people started to get a little cold on Josh Rosen. Because even at UCLA, we beat them, right? We beat them at home. That was a very fun game.
That was an awesome game to watch.
But Josh Rosen never really lived up to the hype that was put on his shoulders as sort of the number one quarterback coming to UCLA. He never lived up to those expectations. And I think there was a lot of people that were still cold about him in that draft. And once he got let go by the Cardinals, there just wasn't any team there that was willing to take on that project.
Were there any specific weaknesses of Josh Rosen that y'all tried to exploit during that game?
He didn't take checkdowns very often.
Really?
Tim Hart, do you remember the play?
He rolled
out to the right and threw it across his body. Tim Hart took it for six.
Yep.
He was a guy who just always tried to make a play down the field, rarely threw the ball away, and always thought that his arm strength was going to make up for, you know, a broken play. And that's not how you can play in the NFL.
So he would basically stare down who he's going to throw at.
He would stare down. He was generally a one-read quarterback. And then, you know, as a play extended, he wasn't good at that. He would start to force things. And it's something we know at the National Football League level you cannot do.
You're telling me he wasn't sliding his offensive line correctly pre-snap.
Yeah.
Which I definitely did not just learn over the weekend.
Sure. we could put it that way. Brandon Ayuk showed up to 49ers camp. What do we feel about that? I don't know if he's actually going to play, but he showed up. I don't think he asked for a trade last week. So if you have not caught up with that, now you know. He wants a new contract. He wants a trade. He still showed up because I don't think he wants to take fines. I think it's as simple as that. But Brandon Ayuk, that's somebody they need. The 49ers need him on that roster, on that offense, to do what they have been doing. A guy like Brock Purdy needs a natural wide receiver that can eat up targets. And Deebo Samuel's not necessarily that. George Kittle's getting older, and he has had a dip in production. Jawan Jennings can't fill in the gaps. Ricky Pearsall just started the year on the physically unable to perform list, their first-round pick out of Florida at the wide receiver position. Brandon Ayuk actually, in my opinion, has a little bit of leverage here. If the 49ers want to stay in this championship window, want to go to another Super Bowl, Brandon Ayuk is going to have to be a part of that offense. I think that much is very clear. And right now, I think there's some real questions about it. And I wonder if they've been fielding calls since he requested that trade.
Do you still think the Steelers would be the best landing spot for him?
I mean, honestly, the Steelers, I've thought about this a little bit more. Like the Chiefs, I don't want that to happen.
Oh, God, no.
They could use a guy like Brandon Ayuk.
Gabe, don't put that into the world.
No, honestly, the best landing spot for a guy like him, but it depends if he actually wants to play. He has been playing in cold weather, though, in Pittsburgh. So he's been in the Northeast. This is a little bit colder, though. Buffalo needs a wide receiver pretty badly.
Yes, they do.
They need somebody, and maybe somebody that could help bring along Keon Coleman. I think that Brandon Ayuk would be really good in a Bills uniform to help out Josh Allen, because that wide receiver room is just decimated. Losing Gabe Davis and Stephon Diggs in the same offseason is something that I don't think is being played up enough.
It's going to be an interesting NFL season.
Yep. Uh-huh. I agree with you.
I cannot wait.
I agree with you.
I'm so excited for it.
And what do you think about the Jets right now? What do you think about the Jets heading into the year? I'll bring up why I'm bringing
fringe playoff team.
Fringe playoff team, wild card.
Wild card.
I mentioned it yesterday. they have an opportunity in the AFC East. We just talked about the Bills.
Right.
No wide receivers anymore. They've lost a lot of guys that were, you know, staples of them being in this championship window the past few years. So that's open. The Dolphins' defense has not caught up. And then offensively, can Tua stay healthy? We'll see what happens. They seem like they're going through a gap year right now. It's open for them, but they have too much drama. Aaron Rodgers missing all the minicamp things, not taking, you know, the responsibility for it. Now you have a guy they traded for. You know that they let Bryce Huff walk. He went and signed with the Eagles. So they got the Eagles edge rusher that the Eagles didn't want anymore. And Hassan Reddick, who I think is on the final year, $14.5 million is owed to him. He wants a new deal, and he will not practice. He's not planning to report to training camp with the rest of the team until he gets a new deal. They traded a conditional 2026 third-round pick that could become a second-round pick this offseason when they acquired Reddick. So they're going to have to get him into camp. You need to have that type of production coming off the edge. I know they have a really loaded room on the D-line side of things. You still have Quinnen Williams. You have a bunch of draft picks. You have guys that can get after the passer. I understand that. But you traded for this guy. You wanted to invest in him. Why have you not given him the contract? I know he denied the first offer, but you have to keep going back and forth. You have to have a better negotiation than this. And the Jets, they wanted to go for it. They had the talent to go for it, and it feels like just time after time, they have been falling just slightly short of the mark that will get them over the hump and into a championship race.
They won 7 games last year. How many games do you think Aaron Rodgers adds to that?
3 or 4. I mean, we're talking about Zach Wilson.
Yeah, that's true.
And the defense is good enough. They have some guys on the outside. I think they could beat an 11-1 team.
What was their over-under? I feel like 9.5 is a good over-under.
I don't have it in front of me right now. You could probably look that up. But, like, again, like when it comes to avoiding the noise.
Nailed it!
9.5.
Nailed it!
When it comes to avoiding the noise, like Aaron Rodgers talked about going into this offseason, this Jets team, it's not just Aaron Rodgers even. They can't do it. And I think it goes back to what we've seen of them in really the 21st century. They have this massive, they have the biggest playoff drought in the NFL right now. We've just seen them be in a very bad operated regime. It's just been a badly operated franchise for as long as I can remember. And I just think there's example after example. Hassan Reddick falls right into line with being another example of how badly run they are. But let's go ahead and grab a break. And when we come back, we'll wrap up hour number 2 with Small Talk right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Here on 92.9, we talk ball every weekday from 4 till 7 p.m. Except right now, it's time for Big Man Small Talk on 92.9's Gabe Kuhn Show.
And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. Now, let's go out to Kansas City right now, where the Chiefs have reported to training camp, and they've already got one day under their belt, even with the veterans involved. And Kadarius Toney is still on that roster. We know about Kadarius Toney. He was not a part of the Super Bowl roster. He wasn't a part of the AFC Championship, and he was on Instagram complaining about it. Why was he not on it, though, Connor? Can we talk about this? He couldn't catch a ball, right? That simple.
Bricks for hands.
Do you know how the Andy Reid and the Chiefs are trying to alleviate that concern? Putting him at running back.
Did they put tar on his hands?
They have changed.
Little Giants?
They have changed his position, and now they believe that playing that role, he will be utilized best. But they also have Xavier Worthy and Hollywood Brown. He's not going to get a lot of snaps at wide receiver.
Isn't one of the important things of being a running back holding on to the football?
Yeah, it's holding on to the football, but, I mean, most of it is catching. I think he has fumbled before. I get that.
He fumbled a lot.
But most of it's catching the ball, actually, like grabbing it, tucking it away. And I think you alleviate that if you throw him at running back. Just give him open space to run with. We'll see how it works. We will see how that whole thing works. I don't know if it'll work well. Now, also, Chicago Bulls fans are beside themselves because if you watched the latest Podcast P episode with Paul George.
I have not watched it, but I have seen the clips.
He had Carmelo Anthony on the show, and I don't know how true this is, but he was talking about way back when they got out of their first rookie deals, LeBron James and him were trying to team up. We know that they were really some of the two of the best scorers in the league at that time in the NBA. And he said, me and Bron wanted to go to New York or Chicago. Chicago was in the fold. If we find a place, let it be Chicago. But apparently, Jerry Reinsdorf was not in on spending that type of money or being in that sweepstakes. So they declined, and obviously they split up. Melo was in New York, and LeBron stayed with the Cavs and then went to the Heat. We understand how all of the history played out. But Chicago Bulls fans are beside themselves, and I get why. You could have had two of the best scores in NBA history, and they declined to do that. They had the Derrick Rose era completely flame out because of his injury, and then from there on they have just been an embarrassment of a franchise, and they've been very dumb about how they have spent their money. They have not had a tremendous amount of success since the 90s with Scottie Pippen and Dennis Rodman and Michael Jordan. And I can see where something like this being said out in the public eye would definitely rub them the wrong way.
It would drive me insane. It would drive me insane. If it ever came out that the Grizzlies had a shot at LeBron and Melo and said, no, thank you, I would lose my mind. I also found it interesting that Melo talked about the Miami Heat team up that Bosch and Wade and LeBron had, and he said that he could have also gone, but he didn't want to be the fourth option. It's like, I don't know if you would have been the fourth option.
Third.
But also,
and then the
you
latest,
probably should have gone.
Well, yeah,
I guess you
also
got your bag. But
also, listen, third, he would have been third option, probably ahead of Bosch.
Arguably second. After
but then
the first
that's
year.
What I was going to say, because Dwayne Wade's knees just, people don't forget about the history there. Dwayne Wade became a shell of himself after year one. He was not the same. And I still think he would have been, if his knees would have stayed healthy, he would have been.
I know we remember him
very, very fondly, but just imagine if those knees would have stayed healthy.
Unreal.
But he probably would have been the second option after the first year.
And he would have gotten a ring.
Yeah. I don't get
it.
He probably would have had to take a pay cut, or they all took pay cuts.
The three of them took a pay cut to make it happen, but they would have probably had to take another one if Melo was going to be a part of it. But it seemed like, I don't know, that would have been, I do remember back when that was a conversation. It was, is Melo going to go with them? And then he decided to stay with New York.
Would that have been a strange, okay, listen, I know that the super teams ran the NBA at that time, but would that have been a strange fit?
No.
Would that have been a little strange with Melo? Melo is not a guy who is ever going to move the ball. He's a stopper. He's a black hole.
He would have gotten so many open shots.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have mattered.
Okay. Okay.
And they had the defense to make up for him on the defensive. That team would have killed people. They would have destroyed people.
No, I get that. I understand that. I still think they would have been the best team in the East and probably would have won championships, but I still think it would have been strange for Melo.
Well, it would have probably
that fit
been,
would have been strange.
Well, if people remember, the first year of the Heatles, the first, 32 games were a bit up and down. I think they had like a 500 record, and then they figured it out. Something clicked, and that's probably what would have happened with Melo. They would have just had to figure out the fit.
Yeah, but Bulls fans, I can see why through their despair, this just adds more to it. This is not
Chicago fun. Sports.
Not fun.
Tough.
Not fun. Now, hour number three is going to be on the way. We're going to get to the Blitz at around 6:30. But coming up next, as is customary on a Tuesday, Christian Fowler from Bluff City Media and the On the Bluff podcast that we are co-hosts on. He's next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.